Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Today we're up to chapter 15, and as usual I'll start this podcast by reading the chapter that we're up to, and that will be followed by a discussion of that chapter, an unpacking of the chapter. If you want to skip the reading part of the podcast and go straight to the discussion, have a look for the timestamp in the description. Alright, straight into it. This is Book 1, Chapter 15 of Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace. "My dear Boris," said Princess Anna Mikhailovna to her son, as Countess Rostova's carriage, in which they were seated, drove over the straw-covered street and turned into the wide courtyard of Count Cyril Vladimirovich Bezukhov's house. "My dear Boris," said the mother, drawing her hand from beneath her old mantle and laying it timidly and tenderly on her son's arm, "be affectionate and attentive to him. Count Cyril Vladimirovich is your godfather, after all, and your future depends on him. Remember that, my dear, and be nice to him, as you so well know how to be." "If I only knew that anything besides humiliation would come of it," answered her son, coldly. "But I have promised, and will do it for your sake." Although the hall porter saw someone's carriage standing at the entrance, after scrutinizing the mother and son, who, without asking to be announced, had passed straight through the glass porch between the rows of statues in niches, and looking significantly at the lady's old cloak, he asked whether they wanted the Count or the princesses, and, hearing that they wished to see the Count, said His Excellency was worse today, and that His Excellency was not receiving anyone. "We may as well go back," said the son in French. "My dear," exclaimed his mother imploringly, again laying her hand on his arm as if that touch might soothe or rouse him. Boris said no more, but looked inquiringly at his mother without taking off his cloak. "My friend," said Anna Mikhailovna in gentle tones addressing the hall porter, "I know Count Cyril Vladimirovich is very ill. That's why I have come. I am a relation. I shall not disturb him, my friend. I only need to see Prince Vasily Sergeyevich. He is staying here, is he not? Please announce me." The hall porter sullenly pulled a bell that rang upstairs and turned away. "Princess Drubetskaya to see Prince Vasily Sergeyevich," he called to a footman dressed in knee-breeches, shoes, and a swallow-tail coat, who ran downstairs and looked over from the halfway landing. The mother soothed the folds of her dyed silk dress before a large Venetian mirror in the wall, and in her trodden-down shoes briskly ascended the carpeted stairs. "My dear," she said to her son, once more stimulating him by a touch, "you promised me." The son, lowering his eyes, followed her quietly. They entered the large hall, from which one of the doors led to the apartments assigned to Prince Vasily. Just as the mother and son, having reached the middle of the hall, were about to ask their way of an elderly footman who had sprung up as they entered, the bronze handle of one of the doors turned and Prince Vasily came out, wearing a velvet coat with a single star on his breast, as was his custom when at home, taking leave of a good-looking, dark-haired man. This was the celebrated Petersburg doctor, Lorrain. "Then it is certain," said the prince. "Prince, humanum est errare, but," replied the doctor, swallowing his R's and pronouncing the Latin words with a French accent, "very well, very well." Seeing Anna Mikhailovna and her son, Prince Vasily dismissed the doctor with a bow and approached them silently and with a look of inquiry. The son noticed that an expression of profound sorrow suddenly clouded his mother's face, and he smiled slightly. "Ah, Prince, in what sad circumstances we meet again. And how is our dear invalid?" said she, as though unaware of the cold, offensive look fixed on her. Prince Vasily stared at her and at Boris questioningly and perplexed. Boris bowed politely. Prince Vasily, without acknowledging the bow, turned to Anna Mikhailovna, answering her query by a movement of the head and lips indicating very little hope for the patient. "Is it possible?" exclaimed Anna Mikhailovna. "Oh, how awful! It is terrible to think. This is my son," she added, indicating Boris. "He wanted to thank you himself." Boris again bowed politely. "Believe me, Prince, a mother's heart will never forget what you have done for us." "I am glad," I was able to do you a service, my dear Anna Mikhailovna, said Prince Vasily, arranging his lace frill and, in tone and manner, here in Moscow, to Anna Mikhailovna, whom he had placed under an obligation, assuming an air of much greater importance than he had done in Petersburg at Anna Scherer's reception. Try to serve well and show yourself worthy, added he, addressing Boris with severity. I am glad. Are you here on leave? He went on in his usual tone of indifference. I am awaiting orders to join my new regiment, Your Excellency, replied Boris, betraying neither annoyance at the prince's brusque manner, nor a desire to enter into conversation, but speaking so quietly and respectfully that the prince gave him a searching glance. Are you living with your mother? I am living at Count Rostov's, replied Boris, again adding, Your Excellency. That is with Ilya Rostov, who married Natalie Shinshina, said Anna Mikhailovna. I know, answered Prince Vasily in his monotonous tone. I never could understand how Natalie made up her mind to marry that unlicked bear, a perfectly absurd and stupid fellow, a gambler too, I am told. But a very kind man, Prince, said Anna Mikhailovna, with a pathetic smile, as though she too knew that Count Rostov deserved this censure, but asked him not to be too hard on the poor old man. What do the doctors say? Asked the princess after a pause, her worn face again expressing deep sorrow. They give little hope, replied the prince. And I should so like to thank Uncle once more for all his kindness to me and to Boris. He is his godson, she added, her tone suggesting that this fact ought to give Prince Vasily much satisfaction. Prince Vasily became thoughtful and frowned. Anna Mikhailovna saw that he was afraid of finding in her a rival for Count Bezukhov's fortune, and hastened to reassure him. If it were not for my sincere affection and devotion to Uncle, said she, uttering the word with peculiar assurances and unconcern, I know his character, noble, upright, but you see, he has no one with him except the young princesses. They are still young. She bent her head and continued in a whisper. He has performed his final duty, Prince. How priceless are those last moments. It can make things no worse, and it is absolutely necessary to prepare him if he is so ill. We women, Prince, and she smiled tenderly, always know how to say these things. I absolutely must see him, however painful it may be for me. I am used to suffering. The footnote here says that the final duty is to receive unction. Evidently, the prince understood her, and also understood, as he had done at Anna Pavlovna's, that it would be difficult to get rid of Anna Mikhailovna. Would not such a meeting be too trying for him, dear Anna Mikhailovna? Said he. Let us wait until evening. The doctors are expecting a crisis. But one cannot delay, Prince, at such a moment. Consider that the welfare of his soul is at stake. Ah, it is awful, the duties of a Christian. A door of one of the inner rooms opened, and one of the princesses, the Count's niece, entered with a cold, stern face. The length of her body was strikingly out of proportion to her short legs. Prince Vasily turned to her. Well, how is he? Still the same, but what can you expect? This noise, said the princess, looking at Anna Mikhailovna as at a stranger. Ah, my dear, I hardly knew you, said Anna Mikhailovna with a happy smile, ambling lightly up to the Count's niece. I have come and am at your service to help you nurse my uncle. I imagine what you have gone through, and she sympathetically turned up her eyes. The princess gave no reply and did not even smile, but left the room at once. Anna Mikhailovna took off her gloves and, occupying the position she had conquered, settled down in an armchair, inviting Prince Vasily to take a seat beside her. Boris, she said to her son with a smile, I shall go in to see the Count, my uncle, but you, my dear, had better go to Pierre meanwhile. And don't forget to give him the Rostov's invitation. They ask him to dinner. I suppose he won't go, she continued, turning to the prince. On the contrary, replied the prince. He had plainly become depressed. I shall be only too glad if you relieve me of that young man. Here he is, and the count has not once asked for him. He shrugged his shoulders. A footman conducted Boris down one flight of stairs and up another to Pierre's room. All right, there we go. That was chapter 15. Not exactly a tremendous amount of fun, that chapter. Really, the chapter was based around Anna Mikhailovna going about the rather uncomfortable business of trying to secure part of a dying man's will. And it felt like a chapter where everyone is just unhappy with everyone else. Vasily especially seemed very unhappy to see Anna Mikhailovna. He also seemed unhappy about Pierre, saying that, you know, he hadn't really done anything to help during his own father's, you know, dying days. Boris seems pretty unhappy with his own mother because he's been dragged into this embarrassing ordeal of having to, you know, visit this guy. And he knows that it's going to be blatantly obvious why they're there. And he's just embarrassed to be part of the whole ordeal, but he does it for his mum. And even a niece of the Count, you know, wanders out of the man's room and she seems very unhappy. I don't think she even says a word to Anna Mikhailovna. Just kind of stares her down and walks away. Not a pleasant chapter, that's for sure. There was a lot of discussion on the subreddit A Year of War and Peace around Anna Mikhailovna's actions and her character. And the question was, do you see her efforts here trying to secure a future for her son as admirable? Or do you think she deserves the harsh judgment that she seems to receive from Prince Vasily and from her own son, Boris? Reddit user Matthew Law said, "It's really interesting to see how different people here can have such different opinions on characters. Normally, when you read a book alone, you don't consider the myriad interpretations of a character. And I often assume that the way I see a character is the way the author intended and the way everyone else sees them. Anna seems a particularly notable example of such a divisive character in terms of people's perception of her, with some expressing admiration at the lengths she'll go to for Boris, and others seeing her as almost predatory towards a dying man." Reddit user Leith Seal said, "I definitely think her way of hovering over the table looking for leftovers is a bit distasteful, but I'm sure most of us can relate to our mothers being prepared to do anything to get the best for us. It's definitely not admirable, nor do I dislike her for it. I more just kind of understand why she's like that. She seems quite a balanced character so far, neither good nor bad." Definitely would agree with that. She's just kind of a character that you understand. You don't particularly like her, you don't particularly dislike her. Very real feeling character. My view of her is, you know, it'd be almost like having Professor Umbridge for a mother. The fact that she's fighting these battles, you know, tooth and nail for her son, it's admirable, but the length that she's gone to, you know, once it gets to the point where the son himself is embarrassed about her actions, you wonder if maybe she's gotten a bit carried away. When Anna and Boris run into Prince Vasily in the halls, Boris seems almost apologetic towards Vasily. He certainly seems embarrassed by his mother, and he's very, very polite to Vasily, and I think it's a bit of a display of humility. So the whole chapter is really a big question around who gets what. Vasily has the most legitimate claim to the fortune through his wife, but it is common knowledge that Pierre, although being an illegitimate son of the Count, is also his favourite son. So there's a very real possibility that he will inherit everything. If we skip back a few chapters, there's a part where Anna says, "Prince Vasily is the direct heir to the whole fortune through his wife. But the father loved Pierre very much, concerned himself with his upbringing, and wrote to the sovereign, so that when he dies, he's so poorly that they expect it any moment. Lorraine has come from Petersburg. No one knows who will get this enormous fortune, Pierre or Prince Vasily. 40,000 souls and 1,000,000 rubles. I know it very well because Prince Vasily told me himself. And Kirill Vladimirovich is my uncle twice removed, through my mother, and his Boria's godfather. So it seems that the fortune's either going to go to Vasily or Pierre, and that Anna Mikhailovna is really just there trying to get a little slice of it on the esteem that the dying Count is the godfather of her son. Lastly, there's the question of Vasily's dissatisfaction with Pierre. He basically says, you know, this man's dying and his own son, Pierre, is just sitting around doing nothing. Reddit user Barefoot Hippie said, "I think Prince Vasily is purposely keeping Pierre away from the Count. He probably doesn't even know he's there." There was a few such, conspiracy theories flying around that Vasily is hiding Pierre from the Count so that the Count thinks that his favourite son never turned up to see him on his deathbed. Personally, I don't think that's the case. I actually think maybe the Count is sparing Pierre from the very nasty business of tending to a dying man. I think Pierre will definitely have an audience with the Count before he dies, saying his goodbyes and everything. But I think you wouldn't want to put your favourite son through the pain of having to help you in those last few days. A Reddit user, Laura Astrid, seemed to agree. Laura said, "If Pierre is really the Count's favourite, maybe he hasn't asked for him because he doesn't want him to see him dying. Maybe he is postponing a painful goodbye." It seems more Tolstoy-esque from what I've seen so far. Nuanced, subtle hints at a character and their values. And also the conspiracy thing about Prince Vasily keeping him hidden doesn't really, it'd be a pretty silly plan because, you know, Pierre could easily just bust in and say, "Hey, he's been keeping me hidden," you know. I think Vasily would be smarter than that. All right, I'm going to end this episode here. Once again, thank you very much for listening today, and I will see you tomorrow.